Incredible time now. Not only do vampires exist, but they walk among us. Brad Steiger has researched in his book, Real Vampires, Night Stalkers, and Creatures from the Dark Side, saying that the real vampires are not immortal, do not have fangs or sleep in coffins, and have no fear of sunlight or crucifixes. In a moment, Brad Steiger on Coast to Coast AM. And you're going to find out that real vampires are parasitic, shape-shifting entities that feed upon us, the energy, the life force. Renowned ghostwriter Brad Steiger grew up in a home where ghostly phenomena was a common occurrence. And due to his mystically inclined mother and his skeptical dad, Brad believes he has achieved a balanced attitude toward ghosts and hauntings that served him well over his 50 years of paranormal research. Since 1958, Brad has been invited to dozens of private homes, office buildings, dorms, hospitals, sacred areas to investigate haunting manifestations. You've not been to my house yet, though, Brad, to look for those ghosts. How are you?
Just great. So you have ghosts roaming around? I should have known it, George.
There's something there, I'm telling you.
There is.
How are you?
I'm just great. And you, I want to thank you and Lisa and Lex and Stephanie and the whole gang for giving me this opportunity to come on and talk about the new book.
I love this story. I love the work you've done in this. I mean, this has always fascinated me. You know, Hollywood has pushed us into the, the fangs type thing. And you know, that happens in parties and things with people. But
I don't want to ruin anyone's fun. And that's why I sent out, and I know you've got a copy of these. I hope you did.
I do. Absolutely.
Kind of a little press release.
I've got the release and the book, which I'm keeping.
Where I say an antidote to the vampires today, because, you know, if you go to a Twilight movie, you hear just all this terrible screaming, but it's not for fear. it's the hunks that come walking out who are now vampires.
Yeah.
And, of course, everything changed back in 1931 when Bela came out, and he had on, you know, the dress clothes, he had on the, and then the magnetic hypnotic eyes. And increasingly, the vampire has become a sex symbol.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it's big stuff now.
Yeah. Now, and originally, of course, now, a lot of people out there have seen the silent film, Nosferatu.
The horrible, ugly-looking vampire.
That's a vampire.
That's a vampire. There's no sex appeal about that thing.
Can you see developing a lust of any kind for that?
No.
Other than to
no.
Get the heck out
you
of
just
it,
want right? to run for the hills. That's
so
it.
What I want to do in this book is, as I said, not ruin anyone's fun. They can still have their vampire games.
And Halloween is coming up.
And, you know, like we said before, George, we dressed up like werewolves. And but there was always someone in a cape, of course, being Count Dracula.
Uh-huh. That's right.
And I just wanted to say and show truly what the vampire is. And I trace it back, you know, to Sumer, Babylon, Egypt. It goes back. That's why the first chapter I call the Sons and Daughters of Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
Lilith, the great succubus, and that known for killing little babies and for seducing men while they're lying in their beds at night, and gave birth to the incubus the incubus then attacks women at night. Now, this again goes all the way back, the Aramanis, the Jinn. So I focused in the first chapters, even though I've got the Hindu, I've got all the vampire. The vampire is known in every culture, but I focused on the Abrahamic religions because I think most of the readers, you know, would be either Christian, Jewish, or Muslim.
Yeah.
And so I emphasize that each of those traditions have a strong tradition of fighting the vampire. And just very recently, and I was just able to get it in the book, they were doing excavations in Israel, and they came up with these human skulls with incantations to drive away Lilith.
Oh, my.
Now, we know that the Jewish religious laws indicate you don't touch the dead person. I mean, that the funeral is the next day. If
it's it goes quickly. Woo.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you don't handle, you know, the bones or the decaying corpse. So at first, people couldn't believe that, you know, this had been used by the Jews of ancient time. But they're right on there. And probably why they were in Babylon, the Babylon captivity, right on the skull. They were using these skulls for magic to drive away the sons and daughters of Lilith, you know, thousands of years ago.
Who were real people, right?
These are real people who are combating. So what I wanted to do, and I had a lot of, well, I don't know if fun is the word, but enjoyment, you know, just doing the research. Now, I want to make clear right up front, because some people are going for their phones now. I'm not talking about the subculture we have of vampires in our contemporary society.
Or the people, for example, Brad, who go to their dentist and get these fangs put on.
Exactly. In fact, the vampire community was extremely cooperative with me on this book. They even sent me the results of an extensive survey, which I was privileged to include in the book, that they had conducted of everyone, well, you know, as much as possible, in the vampire community, and allowed me to use it in the book. I guess it was kind of amusing in a way. You know, there are no secrets now with the Internet.
That's
there?
Right.
I mean, there
That's
just
right.
are no secrets. So I received an email from one of the leaders of the vampire community saying, you know, I kind of heard through the grapevine or whatever that you're doing a book on vampires. Now, I'd like to, you know, extend my cooperation. Now, that was very, very nice. And as I say, the vampire community, because I made clear from the beginning, I'm not talking about you. Like they say, if you want to go to the dentist and get fangs, if you want to, you know, dress up and go to the nightclubs, I mean, if you want to have Halloween every day, then that's your right and privilege, as long as it's not harming anyone else.
Right, right. These vampires, are they what you would call the energy sappers?
They're the big-time energy sappers. They are really the, in other words, and you know this, George, but maybe some of our listeners don't. That the vampire community divides themselves, you know, into psychic vampires, sanguinarians, and then there's a mixture of the two. And in the survey, by the way, far and away the largest number of vampires in the contemporary community are psychic vampires.
Yes.
Sanguinarians, they aren't drinking large amounts of blood. It's probably a mutual exchange. Maybe just take a little bit of blood, exchange it, that's it. Because, you know, we can't drink a pint or a gallon of blood, we'd die, you know, or we'd become terribly ill.
You'd get poisoned. Yeah.
You'd get poisoned. So the whole situation with these entities, I maintain, and interestingly, some of the scholars in the vampire community, I mean the true scholars among them who are researching it, not just having fun with it, agree with my thesis that this goes back to very ancient times. In other words, the real vampires, you know, we might compare to kind of a insidious virus that first infects and then controls the host body to commit these crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, here's, think of it.
Like Charlie Manson, maybe he was a vampire.
Well, yes.
You know?
And certainly, had that control over his group who went out, and it's interesting. I was going to have a chapter on Manson in here, and I
really?
Well, yeah, I've got Dahmer, I've got Richard Trenton Chase, I've got
Jack the Ripper,
and I thought, well, I don't want to go heavy on that, but But you picked up on that, my friend. I was going to include, because he sent them out to do these entire bloody things, and obviously there was some ingestion of blood and so forth. But then the host, the virus, call it the vampire virus, leaves the host body, perhaps after a murder has been committed, and in a sense, leaving the, at that time, maybe puzzled or confused human to face justice, you know, for murders yeah. that may have committed. Now, we hope it doesn't go
Good
that
point.
Far, but I do have, and one should always check with a doctor, a psychiatrist, or whomever, but I do have a list there of things you might begin to notice among friends or family or, God forbid, yourself.
Does that include dress, for example?
That could include dress, a manner of dress, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Appearance, mm-hmm. hairstyle, stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. The let's go back. Well, first of all, let me ask you about the artwork. How did you get the artwork for the book Real Vampires?
I have the most wonderful group of support. I guess the support team, you might say.
It's great stuff.
These are very fine artists. Ricardo Bustanio, he designs half the floats in the Mardi Gras. He does the decor for the Mardi Gras ball. I mean, this guy is, you know, a tremendous pro. And again, God bless him. He's been reading my book since he was like 14. So, you know, Brad, what do you need? And Ricardo's is like Sherry and myself. He never goes to sleep or he sleeps in the daytime. I think our neighbors think we are vampires because, you know, we were always up all night. And could just pick up the phone and say, Ricardo, I need, you know, and he just zip, zip, zip. Same way, one of the illustrations, Bill Oliver, he's a Canadian, so, you know, we have the time difference. And again, a night person, so, you know, and Wolfman, Dan Allen did some of them, and there are a number of others who may have contributed an art piece or two. But the principal ones up there, I think you see, they're just fantastic. And getting compliments on the artwork, getting compliments on the layout of the book. Some people have said, you know, it's like a coffee table book, only it's in a giant paperback size. But I'm just so delighted with the support. And then a number of groups, as I say, the contemporary vampire community, Haunted America tours, the staff, you know, they're just...
Did you run into any resistance at all when you were doing this?
None
at all.
I thought I was going to when I got the first letter.
Yeah.
But again, it was an offer to help. And the receptions, the reviews have just been amazing. And I'm just so... See, I've reached the point. And you know... At first, when Art Bell started calling me the grandfather of the paranormal field, and I
didn't want to bring that up.
No, you never have, and I've really appreciated that. But again, the marvelous thing is happening, and there's no way to describe the kind of feeling you have. You know, when guys and gals who were reading my stuff when they were 13 and 14. Are now contributing art. They're contributing. Many of them contributed because they've gone into psychical research.
God, Brett, I was going to call you the great granddad of.
Well, that's I guess I fit that
you,
category.
You could be
now.
There. Well, you keep going, and you know, and I know Sherry's not a vampire. You were not sure of yet, you know.
Well, I don't know. There's something. The idea of the fact that these entities, I don't want to sound preachy here, but what I hope to accomplish also in the book is for all these young girls especially who are screaming at Robert up on the screen and whomever else is the current hunk,
right,
that they do not become seduced by real vampires.
And that could be very easy.
And that's one of the reasons, you know, why I wrote the book and structured the book. It did, and I have some accounts in there. And even though I say, you know, it's like a virus, I have some accounts from people who really had some very frightening experiences with what seemed to be almost the conventional Hollywood-type vampire.
I would guess that there's some people who are pretty good at the characterization, and they look at these Hollywood folks, and they, you know, they copy them, and they go off and do their thing.
Well, you know how the pedophiles work with the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
It would be so easy to work, you know, because there are so many vampire sites and so forth available right now on the Internet, and to get on there.
Well, how do you know what's fun, Brad, and what's dangerous?
Well, that's it, and that's why I try to lay it out. I try to lay it out in the book, you know, and it's not all vampires. You know, it's night stalkers and creatures from the dark side, which I have, and some of the people find the most frightening part of the book, or the most frightening chapter for many people have been the chapter on the strange black-eyed boys that appear on doorsteps and so forth. I started picking up and hearing about those several years ago and have some extraordinary accounts. Is this another type of vampire? And then I've got a chapter on vampires and UFOs. I mean, if we go all the way back here again, we do have in all accounts of the Abrahamic religions, that's Christianity, again, Judaism, and Islam, an account of a great war that took place between the forces of light and darkness, and the forces of darkness retreated.
Yes.
Just from Earth, but just in the space between the Earth and the fixed stars, and they are determined to come down from this dimension. And it's interesting, you're talking previously about dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
We, I mean, 10, 20 years ago, if we're talking about multidimensional beings, you know, people would have, but now, you know, our scientists, our physicists are talking about string theory with possibly 10 dimensions. They say a minimum of 10 dimensions. And the idea that these beings come then from this other dimension, and that's their goal. It's their goal. They really look upon us as cattle. They look upon us as their food source, or they simply want to lead us into a path of destruction.
Here's a scary paragraph of your book. Listen to this. While the vampiric virus may infest handsome men and beautiful women, none of those infected have superpower human powers. Real vampires and those whom they possess are loathsome slashers, rippers, murderers who do not promise immortality with their sensual bite, only a painful death. That's scary stuff, Brad.
Well, it is scary stuff, and I want to make that point. A couple of the reviews that have come in said this is a book you don't want to read in dim lights, or maybe you don't want to read it after dark at all.
Because it's scarier.
There are some genuinely scary chapters, I concede, but I want them to be. I want people to pay attention to the dangers that are out there.
It's scarier than the vampire that lives in a coffin, because these vampires can put you in one.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right.
We're going to take this quick break. Our special guest tonight and the next hour, we'll take calls. Brad Steiger, his website, bradandsherry.com. Linked up, obviously, at coasttocoastam.com. Brad has a lot of work and books out there. The one we're talking about tonight, Real Vampires, Night Stalkers, and Creatures from the Dark Side. And when we come back, we'll get some of the stories that are in this book from Brad. We'll be back. Real Vampires includes more than 160 terrifying stories of hideous creatures that lurk in the dark. More with Brad Steiger when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Brad, I want to go through a few of these highlighted stories with you. Fantastic, and have you elaborate a little bit more. You got to tell me about this one, about the young bride-to-be possessed by an evil spirit, pretending to be her recently deceased uncle. What happened there?
Well, I'm trying to get as many different creatures from the dark side, and again, crossing cultures as often as they could. And that's the Dibbuk in the Jewish tradition. Again, exorcism is not, you know, widely practiced among rabbis, but in certain cases, and I actually have not the ceremony itself, but I do have the steps of exorcism if the rabbi and the committee gather around. This was again true story of a woman who was possessed for 20 some years by a Dibbuk who claimed to be her uncle. And, you know, when she would think and try to pray him away and so forth, you know, I'm your uncle, you've got to, you know, I this is how I keep love living and so forth. And finally, she just, you know, had enough. And so a ceremony was conducted, a ceremony of expossession or depossession, whatever you want to call it. And the young woman, well, she wasn't exactly young when she was finally freed. But, I mean, just think of living decades in torment of being possessed by an entity that claimed to be a dear uncle, whom you thought very highly of, but, you know, who from time to time would make you do things that would make you embarrassed or humiliated. And she was at last freed. And it's also in that same chapter where I managed to bring in the skulls that were found probably from the Babylonian tradition.
Yeah.
And these would be primarily mystical Jewish traditions like the Kabbalah and so forth. And there are other societies within, and not mainstream, but these. But the mainstream and the traditional rabbis can, from time to time, if they deem it necessary and deem it extraordinary, they blow the shofar, I've got it step by step, you know, of exactly the ceremony that would be conducted. We've had a lot about Roman Catholicism and the exorcism followed, and I thought, you know, hey, let's look at some other traditions and how they follow it. You know, we know the sprinkling of the holy water and be gone, and we've all seen the exorcist and the pea soup and so forth. But we have this phenomenon, or I'm maintaining a reality that afflicts and affects many individuals. Now, there's a classic tradition, George, and you know it well because you've been watching these movies since you were a kid.
Yeah.
And a vampire cannot enter a home unless he's invited, right?
That's right.
Well,
not true.
True.
Is it true?
But we can invite that entity by so many ways, not just by inviting him by saying, come in. But we can invite that by alcoholism, drug addiction, lying, cheating, sexual addiction, the weaknesses. Whenever we succumb to the weaknesses of the flesh, I'm sounding kind of biblical here now, but when that's also an invitation. Cheating, lying, becoming habitual liars. That's also an invitation for these entities who really want to degrade us, who, if they are, and call them. If you want to call them the fallen angels, maybe they fit in that category. Those are the true parasites, spirit parasites, that will use any invitation, not just welcome, come in, but by our excesses and by our weaknesses, we can invite them.
Brad, these creatures, these human creatures, do they do their thing mostly at night?
They can do it any time of the day because, you know, sun sunlight doesn't make them go up in flames. No. But and that's what throws so many people off, because they go by the Hollywood traditions and so forth. But that's what I say, you know, they and crucifixes, you know, that doesn't bother them, because they don't respect any organized faith or religion. They don't respect the faith in Jesus, or they are, you know, from the other side. They're the other side of the spiritual aisle here, and seeking to defame us and humiliate us and possess us any way they can.
There's a story you write about a college student that thought, hey, you know, I met this woman, and she takes him to a party. What happens?
that's one that's been in my file for years, and some of these, and you know, I have to change the names, obviously.
Of course.
And the one story, I'll refer to that in a minute, because it's kind of a dark, humorous situation where the attorney made me change all the names. So in this particular case, the young man who, strict Baptist family, he doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't party. But the young guy, he gets along, and he's a personable fellow, but he stops by this tavern one night, and the guy said, come on, let's have a beer. Well, he knew his father and mother, you know, would have kittens if he did, but he thought, oh, what the heck, you know, why not? I want to be one of the guys. And so he tipped a few and was kind of becoming one of the fellows, and they were laughing and saying, hey, you're not such a prig after all. And this woman comes in, and she's veiled. She has only those eyes that look out at him. And, of course, all the guys said, man, you know, she is hot. You know, who is she? She doesn't pay any attention to his friends, but she beckons him. And he follows her, and when he finally comes home, he isn't he anymore. He is she. She possessed, because usually she liked to get women, and she claimed to have been an entity going back to the days of Egypt, when she was made into a vampire, when she was blooded, and she possesses young people's body. She tries to find those who are purest of heart, who in a moment of weakness have let down their guard. Then she possesses. When the body grows older, because she likes to stay young and attractive, she possesses another young body. Now, in this case, this went on for some time, because the father was very well situated in the community, and he was humiliated by having his son talking as if, I mean, he couldn't, of course, I mean, how could you expect the poor man to understand what was going on?
Sure.
So they had him committed for a time, and they had to withdraw there, because he kept on, you know, and he makes suggestive comments to the women, and he even said, when they brought in someone to use hypnotherapy and regress the individual, that she was about to possess one of the nurses, because she liked the way the nurse looked, and she really did prefer the female body. But this was a young man, pure, who had relaxed, and that's why. And this went on for quite some time, till they managed to find a psychic who had a high reputation and had also spent a lot of time in the Mideast. So she did speak the same. This is really a story. They brought in she would speak in Arabic from time to time, or what they finally figured out was Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a professor from the college who could translate, and then the professor of anthropology knew a really respectable psychic who had been in the Mideast and also spoke that particular Arabic dialect, and an exorcism then was conducted to remove that spirit. Now, as soon as I mean, this is a story that's been in my files, and I've dealt with it and checked it, and it's just remarkable. At the same time, I get a letter from a young man who is being followed by this lady in black.
Stalking him.
Stalking wherever he goes. And, you know, this, he writes it with such honesty and simplicity. His father's stationed in Germany. This is after the war, and he got a job in one of the communities. And he would see her first at the far end of the block, and then, whoop, you know, she'd be right beside him. And he would look, and then he couldn't really see her. He thought he'd gone, and then he'd look and see her reflection in the store windows. Jeez. Walking beside him.
Well, are they mystical, these creatures?
Yeah, they are completely. It. They right. They are multidimensional beings, as we are. We're body, mind, spirit.
Sure.
I've heard you say that on the program many times. But these entities are paraphysical. You know, that
they need a host.
They need a host.
Yeah.
They need a host. Or, in this case, she could manifest also and achieve a form. But generally, they need a host.
Can somebody play around too much and conjure these creatures up, or they show up at your doorstep?
I have a story in there of a woman. It's so sad. They had really the perfect marriage, but she just couldn't stop playing, and I'm using that word deliberately, playing with the occult. Didn't take it seriously. This is just fun and games. And she conjured one of these beings. The husband didn't know what was happening, and then one night the being manifested in the bedroom, and he could not believe his eyes. There's this winged, demonic creature right in their bedroom. And then it's quite an involved story after that. And again, it's a situation where they tried to work with, they tried to exercise. He said, I can't handle this anymore with the children. He would take her to court, try to get a divorce, and then she would be completely her normal self and put all the blame on him. He finally left her with her mother, saying, you know, I can't handle this. You know, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm a weakling. Maybe I'm a coward. And the mother couldn't handle it either. And this poor woman is committed in an asylum to this day.
Oh, my God.
And the husband, when he wrote to me, said, you know, you may think I'm a coward, but he says, I do visit her. I try to visit her, you know, every 2 weeks or at least once a month, and there just doesn't seem to be any improvement. She is now again, someone would say schizophrenia or some other mental illness. But this man who did not want to accept could not explain this incredible demonic winged entity, and Bill Oliver art in the book captures perfectly this image, and then took off through the ceiling and ran on the roof and ripped up the roof. I mean, these are things that happen to people, and obviously families, you know, are loath to share them sometimes.
Did your artists, did they get scared by some of the pictures they created?
Sometimes they do.
They are ghoulish.
I'm laughing because I just got an email from one last night working on a new project and said, you know, that some of this is freaking me out.
Well, let me tell you, the picture of Jack the Ripper is one of the scary ones. I mean, that look, you got to see it.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because, again, just a normal guy who has kind of a strange look in his
eye. I don't like eyes looking back at me. Right.
Well, no, this is, again, the other story, which I say don't boast if you think you're a vampire. Just very quickly, because I know we're coming up on the hour.
We've got a few minutes, yeah.
Okay, I'll make it very quickly. Two roommates. One guy is a big, huge, burly guy. And he claims he's a vampire. Okay, now his roommate is just a tiny little guy, and he says, oh, come on. Now, the big roommate had porphyria. In other words, he had what we call the vampire disease, where the eyes would get red. He's not a vampire, but, you know, they call it
But they call it that disease, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. So he started to look like a vampire and
act and dress and everything
else. Act and dress. And then he would take great delight in scaring his friend. But they were really good roommates. You know, they really got along.
Yeah.
Except when he got on this kick, you know, I am a vampire. I'm coming for you. True story, what happened? The little guy finally got a bat, clubbed him, put him in the bathroom. He didn't know what to do with this huge guy.
Killed him?
Killed him, cut him up in dozens of pieces because the guy weighed nearly 300 pounds, took him and then buried all of the pieces and then claimed his friend. But in other words, he came to believe he was the vampire.
He was defending himself.
He was defending himself, and that was his defense. And again, true story.
Did they get him in court or what, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They
did get him.
They put him in an asylum, but, you know, it's kind of one of those under surveillance
situations. Man, that's a gray area. I'm not sure that they could have gotten him.
Well, they trying to sell it to the jury, you know. Well, I believed he was a vampire, and they're sitting here.
Well, you know, yesterday, I guess, and tonight, but yesterday, some guy hijacks a plane in Mexico.
Right.
Because it was 999. He flipped him and thought it was the Antichrist, and he was freaked out.
What are you going to do?
Unbelievable. Yeah.
But this is the one where, you know, I can't use any of the real names for...
They're out there, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, the family situation here, you know, these people all are real, and they all have families. And you do have to check, you know,
Sometimes I wonder if it's just not better to have fun with the old vampires who wear their costumes and run around on Halloween.
Well, people can do that. I don't, you know, that's fine.
Seems safer.
Yeah, there are the people who are...
Are these people?
They become so deep into it, George, that they're seduced by it.
Yeah. Are they whacked out, Brad?
I think anyone who becomes possessed by these entities, you could say that they are whacked out, especially when the police investigate their apartments and find every utensil, including the mixer and coagulated blood on everything.
Oh, my God.
And find bowls of blood in the refrigerator. You have to think the person's...
A little whacked out.
Yeah, a little bit.
Let's take phone calls when we come back in just a moment. Our special guest tonight, Brad Steiger, Real Vampires, Night Stalkers, and Creatures from the Dark Side.